Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good evening, everybody, and welcome to the latest edition of UF Trotterme Radio. And tonight we've got a special broadcast. It's not during our normal scheduled broadcasting time, so I wanted to finish up our interview with Gary Hunt and our discussion about the hypocrisies and contradictions surrounding SB 1070, Arizona's immigration enforcement law, which pretty much mirrors and is identical to the federal government's illegal immigration laws and illegal alien laws. We covered the first part of it with Gary Hunt about a week ago, I believe. You can go back and find that in the archives. You can get to the archives by clicking on the orange RSS button on the Blog Talk player in the chat room at uftreadonme.com. Or you can go to www.blogtalkradio.com/randymack, and you can get all the archives there as well. So with that being said, let's get right into it, and let's start discussing SB 1070, the contradictions and hypocrisy surrounding it, as well as the obvious gutting of SB 1070. So with that being said, Gary, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Thank you, Randy, and I'm doing fine. It's been a busy, actually, couple weeks, and I think probably everybody has seen an article that dealt with a question of jurisdiction. It came out in a Canadian press article, and it questioned whether Judge Bolton had the authority to preside over the Arizona case. Now, a friend of mine contacted a fellow named John Bauma. He's with SW Law in Phoenix, and it's one of the biggest law firms in Phoenix. I mean, these are prestigious people, and I think that they were involved in the preparation of SB 1070 and may be involved in the proceedings that are going on right now in the federal court. Now, the friend sent the article from Canada Press to him and said, well, what about this? Now, there's two parts to the Canada Press article. The first one had to do with jurisdiction. The second one had to do with whether it was an invasion or not. But we're dealing with the first one right now. A number of people have emailed me the last few days asking about the Canada letter, and, last few weeks, I should say, since it came out. And, well, law's an interesting thing. I mean, even Alexander Hamilton, the most evil one of the founders, felt that law should be easily understood, not constantly changing. If it's a rule of action, how can we respond to that rule of action unless it's easily understood? So with that in mind, John Bauma responded to the friend of mine by saying, thank you for sending this. The lady in Canada Press is correct that the Supreme Court does have original jurisdiction, but not exclusive jurisdiction. Here's the statute showing the U.S. Supreme Court's jurisdiction as stated by Congress. And it's from 28 U.S. Code section 1251, original jurisdiction. A, the Supreme Court shall have original and exclusive jurisdiction of all controversies between two or more states. B, the Supreme Court shall have original but not exclusive jurisdiction of one, all actions or proceedings to which ambassadors, other public ministers, consuls, or vice consuls of foreign states are party. And then the two and three are significant. Two, all controversies between the United States and a state. Three, all actions or proceedings by a state against the citizens of another state or against aliens. Now, he had highlighted those two and three. The Supreme Court shall have original but not exclusive jurisdiction of all controversies between the United States and a state. Now, the question a number of people ask me is, what's the difference between exclusive jurisdiction and original jurisdiction? The title of the section is original jurisdiction, but this is saying the Supreme Court shall have original but not exclusive jurisdiction. So the question arises, what is exclusive jurisdiction and what is original jurisdiction? Well, if we just think about it, I mean, law should be common sense. Original jurisdiction, that would mean it would have to originate there. Exclusive jurisdiction would mean that it can't leave there. So So if you've got original jurisdiction, you might not have exclusive if you're a lower court. But if you're a higher court, it can go up, so it would not be exclusive. But it seems if you start at the top and there's no appeal from the Supreme Court, that if it's original, it also has to be exclusive. So here's the definitions out of Black's Law Dictionary. Original jurisdiction. Jurisdiction in the first instance. Jurisdiction to take cognizance of a cause at its inception, try it, and pass judgment upon the law and facts. And it's distinguished from appellate jurisdiction.
Okay.
Now, that statute I read you said they have original jurisdiction in this matter, though not exclusive. So let's see what exclusive jurisdiction says. That power which a court or other tribunal exercises over an action or over a person to the exclusion of all other courts. That form in which an action must be commenced because no other form has the jurisdiction to hear and determine the action. For example, by statute, actions brought under the Securities and Exchange Commission must be brought in federal district court. Exclusive and concurrent jurisdiction, which is a sub-definition under exclusive jurisdiction, the federal courts have original and exclusive jurisdiction over certain actions. Note, controversies between two or more states, and concurrent jurisdiction with that of the state courts and others, actions between citizens of different states. Now, that's from Black's Law, 5th edition. Now, I've gone over and over it, and I can't see that you could have original jurisdiction, be the Supreme Court, the top court in the land, and have original jurisdiction, but not have exclusive jurisdiction. And I cannot see how reading this and using the English language, even though it was taught in a government school, that we can see it any other way than if it's between the United States and a state where it has original but not exclusive jurisdiction, it has to originate in that Supreme Court. So the attorneys are saying, no, we don't know what we're talking about because we don't understand what that means. And I have to agree with the attorney. I don't understand what it means because he says I'm wrong. He says you're wrong in thinking that. He knows what's right, but we don't. But we're bound to abide by these laws. It is rather curious. So I wanted to make that point because, as I say, I've received a number of emails about this original and exclusive jurisdiction. And quite frankly, I don't understand it. If I think I do, I think I ought to pick up a rifle and enforce it. But, you know, there's just something seriously wrong when we cannot understand the law as written. Okay, now we're going to pick up where we left off at the last show on this subject. And this has to do with the Bolton ruling and the injunction against four provisions of SB 1070. Now, in SB 1070, this is the Bolton's identification, mandatory immigration status determination upon arrest. The court first addressed the second sentence of Section 2B, quote, any person who is arrested shall have the person's immigration status determined before the person is released, end quote. Arizona advances the proper interpretation of this sentence is, quote, that only where a reasonable suspicion exists that a person arrested is an alien and is unlawfully present in the United States must the person's immigration status be determined before the person is released. Now, I don't need to read the rest of it. What I read you the first time, any person who is arrested shall have the immigration status determined before the person is released. Arizona did a bad job in writing that provision because that means if anybody's arrested, any person who is arrested, shall have their immigration status determined. Now, in their arguments before the court, they said only where reasonable suspicion exists. Now, if they had put that only where reasonable suspicion exists in the law, there probably would not have been an injunction against that provision. But the burden on the federal government, ICE, and the people responsible for determining status would be very busy if ever any person who is arrested shall have the immigration status determined before he is released. If there were 10,000 arrests in one day in Phoenix, there would have to be 10,000 inquiries and determinations. So it is absurd to think that everybody should jump through that hoop. Only those where there's a reasonable suspicion. Now, going on, she says the United States, well, now that I've addressed that. It was an error in writing. Okay. Now, we go down to the, continuing on the same subject, pursuant to 8 U.S. Code, Section 1373C, DHS is required to, quote, respond to any inquiry by a federal, state, or local government agency seeking to verify or ascertain the citizenship or immigration status for any purpose authorized by law by providing the requested verification or status information, end quote. That's federal law. If anybody didn't get it, let me know, because I think it's pretty clear that the federal government has to respond to any inquiry by federal, state, and local government agency seeking to verify or ascertain the citizenship or immigration status. Then DHS has, in its discretion, set up Department of Homeland Security. In its discretion, it has set up LESC, which is administered by ICE and serves as a national enforcement operations center that promptly provides immigration status and identity information to local, state, and federal law enforcement agencies regarding aliens suspected of, arrested for, or convicted of criminal activities. Let me run that by you again. Serves as a national enforcement operations center that promptly, this is federal, promptly provides immigration status and identity information to local, state, and federal law enforcement agencies regarding aliens suspected of, comma, arrested for, comma, or convicted of criminal activity, end quote. Well, that's what Arizona's law wants to do. So why are they using this to argue it? Well, we'll see the stupidity of the argument after this. But it says that the LESC base is set up to respond regarding aliens suspected of, arrested for, or convicted of. And this is exactly...
suspected. You did mention that word, right? Suspected?
Arrested or convicted of criminal activity. Now, if you're detained on the street, you've got to be suspected of something. That's been established in law for a long time. They can't do random stuff. And Arizona's law made it very clear that unless there's a reason for detention, it doesn't apply. So what Arizona's done is, well, we're back to the confusion. Does the law really mean what it says it means, or is it what some guy in Washington says it means, or some judge, or something like that?
Oh yeah, Gary, I got a question. We've got a caller on the line with their hand raised for a question. You mind if we take a question real quick?
Turn it on.
All right, hang on a second.
Hello.
Hello, Skype caller. You're on.
Hello. Go ahead.
Hello.
Yes.
Hello.
Hi, my name is Drew, and I'm calling from California. I was wondering what your thoughts are on this, okay, because the federal government doesn't seem too concerned with our borders, okay, that's pretty clear, okay, and all the mishmash and whatnot. You've heard of what was presented in front of Congress a couple of sessions ago behind closed doors when they were debating something called the North American Union. And that was to combine Canada, the United States, and Mexico and make us an entity like the European Union. And don't take my word for it. If you've never heard of it, you can go online and check it all out. It's there. And, yes, Congress did, and they shot it down. But maybe the reason why the president and the feds don't really give a damn is because that's what they're looking at. And they figure it's just a matter of time. So why should – you know what I mean?
I agree. I know what you're meaning. In fact, I'm from New Mexico, That's where I was born, and I've lived in California, Arizona, Nevada. I've lived in most states. I've lived in about 30 states in the U.S. Right now, I'm actually living up in Calgary, Canada. And let me tell you what the news up here says. 5 years ago, the news openly came out and said that they had already begun the integration of the U.S. and Canada and Mexico. And in fact, they openly stated in 2005 that the CIA and Canada's CSIS were already merged.
Right.
And Canada's RCMP and the FBI were already merged.
Right.
And now they're now in Canada. If you're a Canadian or an American bureaucrat working for, let's say, Child Protective Services or some other bureaucratic branch, you can actually transfer from one government to the other government unilaterally now.
Right.
So as far as us being, you know, as far as them trying to work towards it, they've already done a pretty good job so far because our government's already merged.
Right.
Wait a minute. We were just talking about the stupidity of the way laws are written. Now, when I was a kid, I could go to Mexico. I didn't even need a driver's license to cross the border or to come back. The same was true of Canada, though I've never been there. But now they're trying the North American Union, and isn't it curious that all of a sudden we need a passport to go to Canada or Mexico and return?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, but see, you know what they're working towards? They're working towards a national ID card. See, there's little steps that they're taking, and if you don't pay attention, and I guess you have to be good at chess, you know, because you're always in chess, you need to know what your opponent's going to do next so that you can combat that, right? And that's the kind of mentality you have to have with this to figure it out, because the other side is extremely organized, and because the American people have failed to utilize their voice and participate in their government for all these decades and decades, they figured that we wouldn't even notice. Okay.
Well, they do, and they are very divisive because they think things out in intricate chess-playing detail, and they're 20 steps ahead of most
of
people.
Of course.
Now,
but
people get so upset over having to get a passport to go across the border, and as you said, we will eventually clamor to, this is stupid to get a passport. Next, you're going to require a visa. Why don't we just go with national ID cards or some form of picture ID? And you're right, it's leading us down, and they're taking two opposing sides to come back to the point that they're trying to make, which is...
See, but they won't let the kitty out at sea, and you really kind of have to dig to find out about how Congress voted on it, and thank God they shot it down when they did, you know? But that was then, okay? And the Congress now has changed dramatically, you know? But I have a feeling it's not just the immigration. It's the way they're purposely destroying our economy. Okay, this isn't all done by accident or because he doesn't know. They all know what they're doing. And see, they're doing it to force us to have no other alternative. And it's unfortunate that we have to take Mexico on as a rider because that place is a chaotic nightmare. But I'm sure somehow that'll be, you know, we'll save them, whatever, who knows. But all these things are heading towards this. And the American public, they don't have a clue. You can go online. They've even got the new proposed currency. It's called the Amero. And if you go on YouTube and look up the Amero, there's, you know, YouTube videos that, you know, private people have put out. But there's also ones that were on the news. And it was funny because this one guy, they were talking to him about economics and whatnot. And they said, well, is there anything hot, you know, new, anything hot that we should hear about? And he said, well, yeah, actually, the new proposed currency of the North American Union, it's called the Amero, and I don't hear anybody talking about it. It seems like everybody else knows except for the United States.
Well, you know what? Brzezinski wrote a book in 1974, I believe it was, called The Grand Chessboard. Go figure that name out.
Right.
But anyways,
he wrote a book
in 1974 called The Grand Chessboard. The book is about geopolitics.
Right.
That is one of the most boring reads I've ever read, and I read all of these books by these people. He wrote one of the most boring books, but it is a vital book, because in that book he openly spoke about the merging of a North American trading bloc with a standard currency.
Right. And the euro isn't going to be the one world currency. The euro is going to take a shot down the toilet. As a matter of fact, it even states that China, that we've already given China because they don't want our dollars. They don't want our dollars anymore. Okay, I could go on and on and on, but all I know is that the American people, because they haven't called it, you know, they haven't said, okay, you guys, game over. Because once it's over, there's not going to be a constitution to argue about. They're going to draft up something new for this new union. Okay, so if people really, they don't think it can happen here, it is happening here. So you need to get off your rump and you need to start letting your voice be heard because, you know, this is terrible. This is so terrible that our forefathers, these selfless men who fought so diligently that this was the right thing to do to make a government by and for the people to this and that, they gave their lives in the process trying to get this, you know, all laid out, and not even for themselves because they weren't even around to experience the fruits of their victory. They did it for us. And in a very short amount of time, we have allowed it because we haven't been doing our job in doing the routine maintenance and letting our politicians hear what we want and don't want. We just sit back and complain on the couch as a whole, you know, and we're not doing our part. So they figure, hey, they're not paying attention. Now's the time to move in. And they have. And so, you know, I just think it's terrible, but it's not game over yet. But people need to get their act together, and this is what should be the most important thing, not what Lady Gaga's doing and all this other retarded, you know, nonsense. We need to save our country if it is indeed salvageable. But the only way that's going to happen is not by sitting around and waiting on the politicians, because I think that the liberals, they're all in on it too, and they're all for it. Why do you think health care? The government doesn't care about our health. And I have my own views on why that was also implemented. Because if you look up RFID and healthcare, you'll see what I mean. They've got commercials already about the RFID chip and healthcare. Videos on YouTube about that too that aren't just made up by people. It's made by the companies that are going to utilize them.
I agree with you. Is there anything specifically that you wanted to talk about with Jerry as far as SB 1070?
Oh, I'm sorry. I just completely got off base. Well, you know,
Not a worry. You know what? This is one of those radio stations that I think you would be actually surprised to learn just how much, you know, how much we do talk about here and how much pretty much all of the listeners actually understand here. You'd be amazed. Most of the listeners I have here, we quote documents going back to the 1850s. So,
right. Okay, so what do you
think
about?
We're well versed here and everything. You're pretty much preaching to the choir at this show. And,
right.
You are very much preaching to the choir here. But yeah,
so
now,
what does
he
think about my thing? Does he think that's why maybe that this is the government isn't really giving a hoot about it because
I think that another show might be directed at the tactics because I've looked at the tactics that the government's used to entrap us, and it goes We can go back to 1910 and the first Federal Reserve Act and then the subsequent passage of the Federal Reserve Act 3 years later in a tactic that's used by government. We can look at NAFTA, the predecessor of, well, precursor of the North American Union, where the conversation, even in the patriot community, was, I like this provision, I don't like that provision, and it was a settling out of what was acceptable and what was not. And nobody in the patriot community, except very few of us, spoke out and said, that's unconstitutional.
Right.
That's not a treaty. You're doing a contract with Mexico. You have no authority to do that. So the tactic is to try and embroil us in a conversation and, you know, don't look at the left hand, look at the right hand, because the left hand's got the knife in it. And that's the tactic they use. So I think it would be appropriate for another show. But, yes, the government is very divisive in the means they accomplish a lot of things, and when they give one man the authority to interpret the law as it's written, and he reads it differently than you and I would because we learned English in school, we've got a serious problem.
Right, but
now,
do you think that's why they don't care about the border security, because they figure soon enough it's all going to be open anyway?
It's very possible, and you know, I can't second guess what they're doing. What I can say, though, is we have to take the initiative as the people of this country outside of the government. We have
right.
every right under the Declaration and the Constitution to deal with certain types of problems. And one
right.
of those is invasion. It's very specific. Article 4, Section 4, I think it's Clause 2. I'm not sure, but the state has the right to protect itself from invasion. Now, the government wants to call it immigration, and they don't even want to call it illegal immigration.
I know.
But when you're talking about tens of thousands of people crossing every month, that's not immigration. That's not a few people coming up here to get jobs. That's an invasion.
Right.
You know, if we let them redefine the words, we lose as a consequence of accepting their definition of those words.
Right.
I've got a page called Verbicide. I've got to catch it up. But another word that's been abused drastically is public. Public means belong to the people, or it used to. And
right.
now we look at public as belongs to the government.
Right.
They can shut down public parks. They can shut down, you know, if it's public roadways. They shut them down all the time for their purposes.
Right. But, yeah, so I don't know. I guess, yeah, you answered my question, but I'm just really fired up about it because I think that the reason why they're not really doing anything, because Jan Brewer has a duty to her people to keep them safe.
Well, she's doing what she thinks is best at this point. Now, Jan Brewer initially wasn't going to sign SB 1070, but the public pressure was so great that she did. And now she finds she's Sarah Palin number two on account of she signed it.
Right.
And so I think that her sympathies, and she's learning quickly that the people are not satisfied with the status quo, and it's time for us to take the initiative. But to what extent do we take the initiative? We've got people on the border that are not government employees in the capacity in the government. We've got two groups, the Arizona Citizens Militia and the Arizona Territory Militia, which is changing their name, and I don't recall what the new name is now. But these are people that are not Border Patrol. They're not. Their job is not to protect the borders, but they're going down and protecting the borders because they realize what's happening. And
right.
is that the only way we're going to stop this? We're not going to stop it by petitioning our Congress or trying to go through the courts, because the courts, you know, Proposition 8 in California.
I know.
If we're guaranteed a Republican form of government, then the people should be able to say what
vote.
The definition of marriage is, especially when it's been on the books for 200 years, and the court can overrule it. Now, the ballot box is gone, the jury box is gone.
Right.
What box
exactly.
does that leave us?
See, that was my gripe with that, too. If something you vote on and you win, okay, that should be it, right? Why? I mean, and twice, not just once, but we had to do it twice here. So that kind of makes you feel like, well, my vote doesn't mean a damn thing. And why didn't these people that are bitching about it get to the ballot box? You know,
well,
but the squeaky wheel gets the grease eventually.
Even if you get to, you know, it passed with a fairly large percentage. But what I've seen happening for 20 years is people elect a politician to office because he'll say the right things. He'll get elected. He'll go to Washington. And whether he was lying to us in the beginning or he was coerced in Washington, look, if you want anything for your state, you'll do as we say. However it works. When people go there with good intentions, those good intentions disappear by the time the ballot counting's done, just about.
Right.
And so you never get more than a couple people voting against, or, you know, well, it's political. There's always enough to impress their hometown by what they say and do up there, but nobody stood in Congress and said, that's not constitutional, we can't do that. I don't know when the last time a congressman had the
Actually, you know what? Actually, on
C-SPAN,
I watch C-SPAN on occasion, and yeah, there are still those that come right out and say it, you know. But unfortunately, they're on the minority side of the fence, and Nancy Pelosi and her little gang of fools let's read it, or let's just get it passed, and we'll figure it out later mentality, you know.
And then you've got the wealth of the Justice Department, which is what we're talking about tonight. The wealth of
the Injustice Department.
Is going to twist these things. And make it appear that the federal law doesn't say the same thing that the Arizona law says. But I've read what the federal law says, and they've already got the system set up to respond to any request from identity information to local, state, and federal enforcement agencies regarding aliens suspected of, arrested for, or convicted of criminal activity.
Right.
What's the story here? Why is that argument, when it's already in federal law, a reason for saying that Arizona can't take advantage of that federal law?
Well, the Justice Department, we've seen in recent weeks and months, are not just anyway. They're part of this, whatever it is, this cancer. I mean, they wouldn't even uphold, or they wouldn't do anything to those Black Panther people who were trying to deter people from the polling place.
Well, paraphrasing Frederick Bastiat, he said the best definition of justice is the absence of injustice. And by that definition, there is no justice in this country today.
Right. So, I mean, it's, and these are all cronies of the, you know.
So we're going to get back to SB 1070 now.
Okay. Anyway, I'm going to let you go, but thank you for letting me share.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank
all right. Bye-bye.
Yeah, have a good one.
Okay. Mr. Paul Matier, U.S. attorney, states in his declaration that LESC resources are currently dedicated in part to national security objectives, such as requests for immigration status, determination from United States Secret Service, the FBI, and employment-related requests at, quote, national security-related locations that could be vulnerable to sabotage, comma, attack, comma, or exploitation, period, end quote. So what they're saying is they set up this LESC, and its purpose was what I read you first, but in fact, we didn't fund it enough, or for whatever reason, and I think the fund, you know, they didn't save funding, but they're saying that we want to use it specifically for national security. And these illegal immigrants violating the laws coming across the borders armed with drugs and everything else is not a national security threat. And we want to concentrate that LESC resource only when it applies to national security. So then the judge says, thus, an increase in the number of requests for determinations of immigration status, such as is likely to result from the mandatory requirement that Arizona law enforcement officials and agencies check the immigration status of any person who is arrested, will divert resources from the federal government's other responsibilities and priorities. Well, if you pass a law to do something, you should be able to do it. You shouldn't let somebody up in the Justice Department say, well, we passed a law and we've set up a system to provide this service, but we don't want to provide the service. We want to keep it to ourselves. We just want to apply the service where we want it. And that's exactly what they've said in their response, and Bolton's gone along with it. Back to Bolton's answer. For this reason, the United States has demonstrated that it is likely to succeed on its claim that the mandatory immigration verification upon arrest requirement contained in Section 2B of SB 1070 is preempted by federal law. This requirement, as stated above, is likely to burden legally present aliens in contravention of the Supreme Court directive in Hines, which is a Supreme Court decision, that aliens not be subject to the possibility of inquisitorial practices and police surveillance. Further, the number of requests that will emanate from Arizona as a result of determining the status of every arrestee is likely to impermissibly burden federal resources and redirect federal agencies away from the priorities they have established. So, pardon my expression, bullshit. I don't know what else to say to that. It just,
hey,
it
Penn and Teller call it like it is. They say, you know, their show is called Bullshit, so be more than jump it out there. It is. And it is. You know, everything that we're facing today with this immigration issue and so many of the other issues that that are just bombarding us on 1,000 different fronts are bullshit.
Now, they say it's likely to burden legally present aliens in contravention of the Supreme Court directive. You know, Arizona didn't make a provision for it because they'd be competing with the federal government if they issued these illegal some little card with their picture on it saying, I've been stopped. Now, you know, they made smog stops years ago in California. and you didn't have to submit to a smog stop for at least a year if you were stopped once. So if you stopped at a smog stop, I don't know if they still have them. I'm in California. I haven't seen one lately. But this, back in the 60s or 70s, I guess, if you stop for a smog or stop for a smog stop and your car was inspected and passed, they give you a little window sticker that says this car has been tested. Now, I'm sure that they would say that's a contravention of federal law for the state of Arizona to give these people a card saying, look, I've been checked and I'm not illegal, whether they're supposed to have paperwork on them or not. But we're going to get in touch that a little more further on when Susan Bolton tells us more about what's wrong with SB 1070. So the next section, B, immigration status determination during lawful stops, detentions, or arrests. Next, the court turns to the first section of Section 2B. For any unlawful stop, detention, or arrest made by an Arizona law enforcement official or law enforcement agency in the enforcement of any other law or ordinance of a county, city, or town of this state where reasonable suspicion exists that the person is an alien and is unlawfully present in the United States, a reasonable attempt shall be made when practicable to determine the immigration status of the person except if the determination may hinder or obstruct an investigation. Now, reasonable suspicion exists. That phrase just struck me because they use that to steal money from people, do searches of automobiles. You know, the cops, under the guise of reasonable suspicion, can do anything they want in violation of the Constitution just about, and the federal government has the same authority. The courts have granted that reasonable suspicion provision almost everywhere in our lives. But now all of a sudden when we're dealing with people that shouldn't be here in the first place, reasonable suspicion can't be used. So you can be reasonably suspected, but that guy that just came up doesn't speak a word of English, can't be reasonably suspected. It is amazing how convoluted this whole approach they've taken is and how inconsistent with the incursions into our rights that have been applied over the last 20 or 30 years this is. Okay, then they go on. Arizona statutes section 11-1051B, the United States makes essentially the same argument about this requirement. First, the United States advances that it imposes a burden on lawfully present aliens not permitted by IMS. I'm going to stop right there. Lawfully permitted aliens, who are lawfully present aliens. Lawfully present aliens are supposed to have identification showing that they're lawfully present.
Yes, and they must carry it with them at all times, in fact.
Right. I don't see any burden exist when they have to pull out their wallet and I have to do that if a cop stops me while driving. Now, if the guy, there's reasonable suspicion that the guy speaks no English and has ragged clothes and everything, and you say, well, do you have your proof that you're lawfully present? I mean,
well, we have to remember also, anytime that we go and apply for a job, we have to provide proof that we are legal, that we have the right to work within the borders of the U.S. and in that state. We must prove this. This is not going above and beyond anything that's already being in, that's already law as it is.
No, but here's your rationalization for it. Now, continuing on, not permitted by Hines, comma, where the Supreme Court sought to protect the personal liberties of lawfully present aliens to leave them free from the possibility of intrusive police practices that might affect international relations and generate disloyalty. So,
now what do they mean by generate?
They want to remove them from the possibility of intrusive police practices. They don't want to remove me. Papers, please. License and registration and insurance. Intrusive police practices that might affect international relations and generate disloyalty. Now, international relations be damned. This is our country. As far as generate disloyalty, Now, if they're not abiding, when they, the first step they took on American soil, they were breaking the law. Do we expect loyalty out of them, or are we concerned that we're going to generate disloyalty when they don't want to learn our language and abide by our laws? Are we generating disloyalty when we kick them back to their country? Are we generating disloyalty when they do get up here and work and send their money back to Mexico or Guatemala or wherever it is? Are we generating disloyalty? That's an absurd statement. Going on, second, the United States argues that this requirement impermissibly burdens and redirects federal resources away from federally established priorities. The United States arguments regarding burdening of federal resources are identical to those outlined above and will not be restated. However, the United States makes several arguments with respect to the burden on lawfully present aliens that are specific to or slightly different in the context of the first sentence of Section 2B. So we get to, without repeating it, go back to the other argument, is even though the LESC was set up to respond to any request by state, local, or federal people regarding immigration, that they didn't mean that. They meant, as we want to use it, we're concerned with national security. So continuing on, first, the United States argues that this provision necessarily places lawfully present aliens and even U.S. citizens in continual jeopardy of having to demonstrate their lawful status to non-federal officials. Oh, we're getting somewhere. The them or us mentality that separates us from law enforcement now exists between state and federal. Because they're having to demonstrate their lawful status to non-federal officials. So the federal officials are the only one qualified to ask somebody if they should be here or not. And that excludes then the state of Arizona, which has a major problem with people that should not be there. The United States further asserts that there are numerous categories of lawfully present aliens, quote, who will not have readily available documentation to demonstrate that fact, end quote, including foreign visitors from visa waiver program countries. Now, if I need a passport to get in this country, and I'm a citizen here, that's just to get in. But if I'm a foreigner, or if I go somewhere else, if I go to England, I've got to have my passport with me all the time. If I go to Mexico, I've got to have my passport. Visa doesn't, you know, if they're waiving the visa, that's one thing. That's permission to come in. And I imagine the visa waiver program applies to Mexicans and Canadians who have passports and want to cross the border, unless the border guard asks questions like, where are you going to go shopping in the mall? Still got to have your passport, don't you? Randy, if you're...
I do. Yes, I do. I do.
She would have to have her passport with her all the time if she came from Canada. She wouldn't need it.
Or she would. Yes, she would. She would have to actually have her passport on her person.
All the time.
24 hours a day. If she is stopped and she doesn't have it on, she can be detained.
So,
that is the law.
So it applies to Americans. It applies to Canadians. It applies to Mexicans with the passport. But it's going to be a burden on these other people that aren't here legally. So who's being protected here? Okay, individuals who have applied for asylum, this is including more people, individuals who have applied for asylum but not yet received an adjudication, let me stop there. I would assume somebody's applied for asylum will have court or government papers indicating that they've applied for asylum and would probably be required to have them on them. On my way to Vietnam back in 1966, I'd left Germany. I was in the States and wanted to go down with a friend to Terminal Island Naval Base and do some shopping at the BX. Well, I went down there and had my military ID card, but I didn't have my orders. So they put me in detention, and I had to have my friend go back and get my orders. I forgot to take them with me. I thought the ID card will get me on the base. So in my own country, when I was in military service, absent those orders, those papers that were required, I would have stayed in the stockade until I managed to get the orders there. Now, they just put me in detention, not the stockade, because I explained, you know, it's about 15 miles from here. I'll be back in a half an hour, 45 minutes. And they said, okay, just have a seat. But we're saying that Mexicans, military people, would have to have their paperwork. Mexicans don't have to. And people on asylum, seeking asylum here, wouldn't have to. Now, the next one listed, people with temporary protected status. Well, I would assume that they would have paperwork indicating that they had protected status. Non-immigrant visa applicants or people who have self-petitioned for relief under the Violence Against Women's Act. Now, all of these would have paperwork supporting that, and I would think it only reasonable that they would have to have that paperwork to show their legitimacy here. And all of that, if they abided by the law that said they have to have the paperwork, that would take the burden off of the LESC so that it could be applied to national security. But if they're saying that these people that should have paperwork don't have to have paperwork, and they're part of the burden, that's kind of absurd. I would think that if people abided by the law that were here legally and had their paperwork, that you could rest assured that probably 99% of the inquiries would show that this person was illegal. Now, how could it be a burden on a system if you're constantly getting jackpots? Ka-chink, another illegal. Ka-chink, another illegal. Ka-chink, another illegal. That's not a waste of resources. But they're implying that they're going to be burdened by all these requests. Doesn't make sense. Also, the United States points out that United States citizens are not required to carry identification. Might not have easy access to a form of identification that would satisfy the requirement of Section 2B. Oh, there we go. What was that the lady said? We're pushing for national ID? Could be. Section 2B, there was a footnote on that. Also, upon a check with LESC or a federally authorized state official, the status of a United States citizen might not be easily confirmable, as many people born in the United States likely do not have an entry in the DHS database. That was the footnote that the judge put in there. United States citizens might not be easily confirmable, as many people born in the United States likely do not have an entry in the DHS database. You got a driver's license, you're in the database. You got a Social Security number, you're in the database. Now, wait a minute. My two daughters don't have Social Security numbers. They're not in the database. But how many people do you know that are not in that database, don't have a driver's license or a Social Security number? In fact, do you know anybody that doesn't that's legally here, a citizen, that doesn't have a driver's license or a Social Security number? Now, if they revoke the Social Security number, believe me, the government does not give up that database. They don't say, okay, we'll erase this guy. It's there. So that's absurd to say that, I mean, they might be talking about a few hundred, maybe a few thousand people in the whole country, and chances are they won't be committing any crimes. So they won't be stopped. But they're trying to create this apparent weight of the burden on this system with stupid, well, I guess it's about as smart as Congress is, but stupid reasoning, stupid rationale, stupid logic, it just don't fit. Going on, the United States contends that the impact on lawfully present aliens of the requirement that law enforcement officials, where practicable, check the immigration status of persons lawfully stopped, detained, or arrested where there is reasonable suspicion that the person is an alien and is unlawfully present will be exacerbated by several factors. First, the United States suggests that the impact on lawfully present aliens is enhanced because this requirement applies to stops for even very minor non-criminal violations of state law, including jaywalking, failure to have a dog on a leash, or riding a bicycle on a sidewalk. Also, the United States argues that the impact will be increased because other provisions in SB 1070 put pressure on law enforcement agencies and officials to enforce the immigration laws vigorously. But why would Arizona do that? Why would they want to enforce the immigration laws vigorously? Is it because the federal government is not enforcing the immigration laws vigorously? The laws are just there to take ink on paper in the federal level.
You know, I read an article, an essay, if you will, by a rancher down on the border. I mean, on the border in Arizona. And this essay was probably 2 or 3 pages long. And it talked about life on the border right now for the ranchers and other residents in that area. One resident actually moved into his shed and locked up all of his things and welded the doors to the shed so that because he'd been robbed over 100 times. People are getting killed. People are being forced off their property. People are terrified down there.
If the ACLU gets into the picture, it's very possible that if he and his wife went shopping and the illegals got in his house and locked the door behind them, that he would have to go to court to get them out of that house, too. And that's how absurd everything's becoming. With respect,
we were supposed to be able to have the right to life, liberty. I like to remember property in there, even though they seem to have conveniently left that out, but pursuit of happiness as well. And the government's only job was to protect our rights to life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness and our freedoms. That was it. So when we live in fear in our own homes from people from another country who are coming in and terrorizing us, killing us, robbing from us, attacking us and brutalizing us, all of our freedoms are gone.
Well, they're forcing us into perhaps an Old West scenario. If we're going to have to expect that there will be violence and theft and destruction of our rights as a consequence of these marauders, wherever they are in the country, but especially along the border states, have we lost the right that those early settlers out west have of defending themselves and their property without relying on local law enforcement, the sheriff or the U.S. Marshal or anybody to come to their aid? I think when Pancho Villa started crossing the border and committing acts in this country, that a lot of citizens' militias mustered and went down and began protecting the borders until the United States military got down there to do their job. And I don't see much difference between then and now because, you know, in the South, when a farmer is killed on his own ranch because he tried to help somebody, we've got nothing different than when the Apaches killed a rancher because he was on his property. The rancher was on his own property. And there was a lot of that. And so people had to defend themselves against the fear. And fear tends to go away when you're armed. If you feel that you can provide a defense against that imposition, you feel a lot better than the frustration of having no defense against it.
You know what I find amazing, though, is that this judge has again created a new class of people. We, the people, the American people here, are once again separated from other people and have less rights than people who aren't even from this country who are here illegally.
Right. And that document was written not for we the people, but we the people and our posterity. Remember that.
We the people and our posterity.
Yes, and there was a descendancy in that. And I am one of the descendants of those people. Not the ones that signed anything, but that fought in the revolution. And how am I treated in this country nowadays? I have less rights than those illegals, according to Judge Bolton.
So I, you know, when are, when did it, how, maybe you can explain this, Gary, how did we get to the point where even people who are breaking the law by being here have more rights than you and I?
A lot of it has to do, and we're seeing it kind of clearly now. They're saying that the immigration, the LESC was set up to do this, but we don't have the resources to do that. So what they do is, and law is always supposed to be intent. All law is always intent. And there's an effort when a case goes before a court, especially a higher court, to determine the intent. So the legislative record quite often was, in the past, introduced in the courts. But since the Eichwander, there's been a lot less of that. So the courts would look at what was intended. And a good example from 1919, can't remember the case, but regarding income, they said, well, what is the definition of income? So they looked in a dictionary, and income was gain. Okay, well, that's gain. Well, income doesn't mean gain now. It means all that comes in. So they changed the word. This verbicide. But let's go back to the intent of the 14th Amendment. It was determined by a number of cases, and I haven't done the background on this recently. I've got it in my files. But there were a number of cases that made it very clear, and I think that the statements of those that wrote the 14th Amendment made it very clear that the 14th Amendment was written to provide a legitimacy to those people that were recently freed by the 13th Amendment. In fact, some cases said that it does not apply to Chinamen. Over the years, that intent has gone away. And so the government has begun handing out citizenship like it's going out of style. Now, if it only applied to those freed by the 13th, that doesn't mean anchor babies. That means the people that were released from federal or state control, the slaves, and came under federal jurisdiction as a consequence of them having no other status in this country. They were born in under the jurisdiction of the United States government. Now, by twisting the words, now we've got the 14th Amendment in question. I can't argue with that. I think it's one of the worst amendments we've got, most damaging. But over the years, you can see how the 14th has changed its intent from the original intent to what we have now. So, you know, if we get rid of the 14th and we start seeing Congress looking to get rid of the 14th, you can expect that they will propose an amendment to replace the 14th. There will, well, let's call it chains. There will be chains upon us. And the Constitution was supposed to be the chains that bind the government. But they do it by getting away from the original intent of the laws as passed. Marriage has been on the books in this country and in most states. It's a contract between a man and a woman. And look what's happening. Proposition 8 in California being overturned by a judge that says that's it makes the same-sex couples inferior, makes them feel inferior. Well, I don't think they're inferior. I just don't think they meet the definition of marriage because they can't procreate. They're not the opposite sex. The traditional definition of marriage. So if there's any inferiority feeling involved here, I would assume it's the queer feeling inferior and trying to not feel inferior anymore. And the judge went along with that saying, well, yes, we've been inferior for a long time, but we don't want to feel inferior anymore, so we want to be able to marry as a man and wife would. So even in Prop 8, we're seeing the court decision on that, the concern over the creating an inferiority complex in queers as the means of a warm and fuzzy feeling of giving them equality. So there again, we've got twisting of what was. And the rate of twisting is getting phenomenal. It's rapid. You know, if I sat down and tried to list all the things in the last few years where what was intended, the intent of law has always been the case. Well, it used to be anyway. What was intended versus what is happening now, that we're seeing a rapid roll, a redefinition of words, redefinition of intent and a redefinition of the whole concept of this country.
So basically, then, you know, they don't even need to change the laws on us. They just change definitions on us to change the law.
That's one.
And if they even have to change the law, then they just
change
the definition in Webster's or something.
They change the definition. No, they don't change it in Webster's. They change it in court.
Well, they change it in court, but I mean, you know, the meaning of the word changes.
It eventually has the effect of change, yes, and you'll see the dictionaries will pick it up, and income is one that for many years gain was the only definition of income.
Yes, gain.
Gain, right? Not
this
all.
This was
income.
And gain was described as profit made from the sale of manufactured goods.
Or from investments or anything else.
From investments and things like that, but it was profit, money actually made.
Right.
Not labor.
Where there was a disparity in values and the gain was on the side that, well, the analogy I use, if I gave you $10,000 worth of gold for $10,000 worth of silver, is there any gain? Randy?
No, there wasn't any gain.
Okay, now if I give you $10,000 worth of gold for $11,000 worth of silver, is there any gain?
You have gain.
Ah, now if I give you $10,000 worth of labor for $10,000, is there any gain?
What gain? You have no. You
there
weren't.
Is
you
no
didn't,
gain.
You bartered.
Right.
Your
gain
labor
is where you get something for free. That's gain. Well, let's, you know, another word that's kind of interesting. Let's look at look up the word progress in a dictionary. Try and find an older dictionary, but I think even the newer ones recognize that progress is moving along towards the attainment of a goal. Now, we're told that all these things are progress. Nobody tells us what the goal is, though, and that's the scary part. If we're making progress and we're going, hey, this is progress, what is the goal? Progress cannot have the ambiguity of having no goal. But we have accepted progress as a good thing collectively in this country. Oh, that's progress.
Progress sounds good. It's one of those warm and fuzzy words that we all know and love so much.
Yeah,
like equality. Equality? That's a good thing. And, you know, you like equality, right? But then we start to redefine equality, and all of a sudden equality isn't so much equality, but more equality for some, while others of us have to sacrifice our equality so they can get more.
Well, that's socialism, to give it away, yes. Let's see, let me find something real quick that I wrote earlier today that will give you an idea of how things are changing. This has to do with the conversation began on the mosque at the World Trade Center. And I think I mentioned earlier that, you know, we got a problem. Maybe I was talking with you, Randy. If we say that, yes, the government should stop them building on their own property when they're properly zoned, what we're doing, this is how laws change. What we're doing is saying that we think the government has a right to say that you cannot do a lawful use on your property if we don't want you to. Now, that flies in the face of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, i.e. property. But it's got us directed in the wrong direction on the problem. It will serve the government in the long run if they have the right to decide whether we can build something that's consistent with the zoning, subject to, well, what happened to the rule of law, not the rule of man? We're going back to the rule of man, which we're talking about SB 1070 here and the power of the U.S. attorney or the attorney general has in the interpretation of these laws. But here's what I wrote about the solution to the mosque in New York. And somebody had posed a question. My answer was, what would be wrong with a law that prohibited any speech, writings, or religion that was in conflict with the principles of the Constitution? For example, communism espouses a form of government whereby the government is the master and the people are the subjects, submissive and dependent on the government for their existence and lives. This is also true of socialism. Would it be wrong to enact a law that was intended to preserve the Constitution? The Constitution cannot be the seeds which sow its own destruction. That would be completely contrary to the intent of the founders. They created the Constitution and the form of government to allow freedom, liberty, and property. To suggest that this would guarantee the rights of those intent on doing away with that form of government is ludicrous, as much so as someone getting elected to president so that he could abolish the office. Similarly, Islam is more than a religion. It is a social and political ideology that requires social norms contrary to the constitutional protections, political norms which allow only religious leaders to hold power, and is intolerant of other religions, which, by its very nature, wishes to use the First Amendment to abolish other religions. The founders, absent a full understanding of what Islam was or would become, is not justification for allowing the First Amendment to be the gun which holds the bullet, parentheses, Islam, communism, or socialism caliber, in parentheses, by which we are to commit national or constitutional suicide. Now, the government has us looking with the warm and fuzzy. This is progress. We've got to change the intent, change the law, change the definition, instead of looking at the Constitution and using it to defend the Constitution. And I don't know how we get to that. But with all that's going on and this SB 1070 being attacked as viciously and vehemently as the federal government is attacking it, is beyond comprehension. And if we want our country, we need to understand that something's gone seriously wrong with this country. When we allow socialists in power, and socialism is inconsistent with the Constitution, when we allow communism. Now, in 1954, a law was enacted that outlaws communism. And let me see if I can find it real quick. I can't find it right now, but in 1954, a law was enacted that outlawed communism because, as it said in the law as it was passed, it was contrary to the intent of the Constitution, that the very nature of communist government. So they outlawed the Communist Party in this country, any political party with communism in it. A guy named McCarthy came on and probably got a little overzealous in denying other rights to people. You know, if he had been a little more subtle, we might still have it. But Richard Nixon was on the commission and got some of his fame from that. But eventually, by the 90s, virtually the entire anti-communism law was washed away.
But well, what's interesting is that during that very same Reese Commission that you were just speaking about, I believe it was Senator Dodd, was it? It might have been. Anyways, there was a book written called Foundations. And it spoke about, during the Reese Commission, they found that all of these foundations in America, the Rockefeller Foundation, the Carnegie Foundation, the Ford Foundation, all of these major, major foundations all seemed to be pushing a communist agenda. So they went around. The commission went around and asked them point blank and openly, it seems that you're promoting a communist agenda and you're funding with millions and millions and millions of dollars all of these communist groups. What's the story here? And they openly stated, yes, we are. That's our job. That's what we're doing. And we communicate directly with the White House on this. So this has been going on since, like what you mentioned, you know, it really came out during the 50s with McCarthy. You know, and I agree with that. You know, anything that, you know, if you bring in a political party whose goal it is to overthrow the very document that is, you know, the very document that restricts the government, that's a political coup.
It is, and when the Constitution is twisted to the point that it has, it becomes the apparent authority for the demise of the Constitution. It is a coup. It's overthrowing the Constitution, our form of government. And I don't know that we've got any choice but to go back and reread the Declaration of Independence and understand that it is a founding document, and that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. Prudence, indeed, will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes, and accordingly all experience hath shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer, while evils are sufferable, than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations, pursuing invariably the same object, evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security. Now, I don't know what the solution is, but all I can say is that's what these guys told me back then is the solution when we have a problem as manifest in destruction of the liberty, our liberties, is Congress and the president and the courts have gotten today. All three branches of government have become so corrupt and contemptible that they don't have any semblance to what the Constitution set forth for them. Courts were never legislators, but they've become legislators. They were the last resort. Now they're the first resort. Congress shouldn't enact no laws that violate the Constitution. But if we look at the laws that they're enacting now, whether it be medical care or anything else, treaties had a definition. There was agreement, a cooperation agreement between countries. They're becoming commercial contracts now. The president does executive orders that extend his powers beyond what was granted by the Constitution. Most presidents did not legislate. They went to the State of the Union. They said what they thought should be, but they did not go public and try and enforce legislation. They weren't legislators. They were the executive branch of government. But now we've got presidents that are constantly legislating both to Congress and to the people.
Do you know what would be a really scary thing to happen in the U.S.? Is if American people actually learned about jury nullification.
Yes, it would, but Laura Criho went to jail for understanding jury nullification. But you can't get on a jury. If you lie to get on the jury, principally, you've given up your principles. If you tell the truth to get on the jury, you won't get on the jury. So it's a bit of a dilemma to think that the jury is the solution. I mean, you've read my article, The Three Boxes, haven't you?
Oh, yes. Well, yeah, I mean, yes. The jury box is lost to us. We know this. The soapbox, well, we have to get a permit to get on our soapbox, which means that we have to get permission from the government to engage in an illegal act and pay them money to be able to do this.
Did you hear what Dr. Laura said yesterday the day before on a program?
No, what did Dr. Laura have to say?
Well, she, black wife.
We're talking about the AM talk show host, right?
Pardon?
Are we talking about Dr. Laura, the AM talk show host?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. What did Dr. Laura have to say?
A black wife of a white man called in and said, when my husband's friends come over, they say, well, how do black people look at this? And so the conversation went on, and finally Dr. Laura said, you know, a black man can say nigger. He can say nigger, nigger, nigger. I see it on television all the time. A black comedian can do it. But if a white person does it, it's bad. Now, Laura, probably under pressure from the network, had to do an apology. Political correctness denies us freedom of speech. But Laura did point out, if you look online, Dr. Laura and the nigger, you'll probably find it. She pointed out that that's something that black people can say that white can't. Now, that's political correctness. We can't say it. They can. They can call us honkies. I don't like to call myself a honky. They've got a freedom that we don't have. Political correctness plays a very large part in effecting change. I'll give you a good example. We had a discussion on my list last week about this. What is the gay person?
What is a gay person?
Oh, somebody that's happy, jovial, carefree. Oh, wait.
Oh, yes. We're talking about...
I'm sorry, I take it back. That definition of gay has been stolen by the queers.
Yes. Well, you know, if you look up in the old dictionaries, I know what gay meant. It meant happy, joy-free.
Right.
It meant, you know, it was a happy-go-lucky individual.
Right. So they've stolen that word to affect a change in their image. If you call them queers, they're queers. The other words, homosexual, homo, faggot. None of them are nice.
No.
But then what they do is not nice. It's abnormal. But when they steal a word like gay, and I can't say he's a gay man when he's not a queer, because people will misunderstand that. So they stole that word.
They'll take offense.
With the intention of making them look like something they're not. And we've accepted that.
Well, you've written a lot of good stuff on Verbicide, even. You know, on your website, you have some great writings on Verbicide where we are destroying, where we're being killed by the changing of our language.
We are, and I've got a lot to do on it. I've got to find the time, but yes, we do, and it's very destructive because it changes, and it is a restriction on freedom of speech. Because I can't say nigger and I can't say gay man and mean somebody happy, jovial, carefree. So, do we have that soapbox still?
No, we don't.
Being pulled out from under us by what they've done, making what they call hate crime or thought crime. You can call it either one or both.
You can actually charge us both at the same time.
By making it unacceptable to use words that have been in our language for a long, 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 long time, they've made us look at something the way we shouldn't. Why shouldn't we look at it as what it is? It is a queer behavior. Queer is not normal or abnormal. It's a queer behavior.
It's abnormal. It's not normal. It's abnormal. It's unusual. It's odd.
So
now it means something else.
So the soapbox has been taken away from us by those two methods. One, not being able to say, well, one by changing the nature of words and stealing words from us and putting something in a light that it should not be seen in, would not be seen in, had they not been allowed to steal the word. And the other one has to do with natural emotions, anger, pleasure, love, hate. You know, all these are human emotions. Now, hate crime says that if you have a human emotion, you're guilty of a crime.
Well, actually, you know, right now, even the psychiatrist Diagnostic Manual has just classified many of our most base emotions, anger, as psychological disorders now.
Well, they might, but I've sure seen some people in Washington demonstrate the psychological disorders. But what happens now is they're criminalizing that behavior. We get in lockstep. We're going to be walking down. We're going to be institutionalized. We're going to be something like 1984, where we've got to walk down between these two lines. And if we deviate to the left or the right of these two lines, outside of these two lines, we'll be defined as needing retraining. Why not? I mean, this guy loves. This guy hates. What happened to life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness? They're all taking second place. So when we talk about freedom of speech, and this is why when I started to write three boxes, I was going to write the four boxes. I started to write about the soapbox, and I kept writing, and I kept writing. I six or seven pages. I looked back on it and said, I haven't even begun to touch it.
Oh.
So I went up to the top. I highlighted everything. I hit the delete button, went up the top and changed 4 to 3 and decided to start with the ballot box, jury box, ammo box. Because we have freedom of speech. But by subtle means, those two means I've pointed out to you, we have lost. And manipulation of words, here's another one. We read the words in the U.S. Code, and it says this is what this LESC is for, but you can't use it. Now, that's a denial of freedom of speech, too, because what they've done is this, they've stolen the meaning of common words and manipulated them in such a way to say, well, this is only for national security, but that's not what the Act said. Well, that's what we mean. So that's a denial of freedom of speech, too, when we hear speech or words, read words, and they don't mean what they're supposed to mean by the way we taught, by the way we read them in the dictionary or anything else. So in a sense, and see, that's where I was starting to get to in the soapbox at page 5 or 6, and I hadn't even touched the subject. But yes, we don't have freedom of speech. But if I say that in public, that's as bad as saying nigger, isn't it? Because all of a sudden, everybody says, we have freedom of speech. They just don't understand how it's been subverted and turned against us. When I was a kid,
it is, you know, and you know, the funny thing is we were talking about this too. Is that, you know, we all fall prey to this as well, and this is exactly what they want to do as well. They keep us fighting over these petty little issues. You know, and they do it intentionally. It's the divide and conquer. Right? Another well written document by Gary Hunt that you can find out there is Divide and Conquer. Read that one. Great art. You know, it's a great essay that he wrote there. You know, but it goes right back into the divide and conquer paradigm as well. You know, that's what a lot of us out there aren't realizing either, is that all of these issues are being concerted for our benefit, so we fight over them, and we cannot really get together and see what the real problem is and unite along that for that common problem instead of fighting against each other while they can continue to get away with, you know, the adultering of our Constitution, the adultering of our country, the adultering of our economy, and everything else, and the destruction of our way of life, our freedom, and our right to choose.
The one I'm working on now is titled Lockstep, the Institutionalization of America. And can't tell you when it'll be done, probably next couple of weeks, but I think when you read it, you'll see even a little more how all these pieces come together and how we have come in lockstep, and we're falling between those two lines, and those lines are getting narrower and narrower all the time, and they're doing it with our permission. As I pointed out it's not the mosque being in New York, it's Islam being in the United States is the problem. But you can't say that. I'll say it, and I mean it. It's because Islam, which is not a religion, it's a social and political order based on a religion, should not have freedom of speech because its purpose is to undermine the Constitution by its very tenets. Everybody should be Muslim. It's probably the religion of peace if everybody's a Muslim, and then it'll be peace when they cut somebody's head off for doing something or his hand off for doing something he shouldn't. But the leaders have to be imams, and the social order dictates that a man can cut his wife's head off if she does something wrong, and all women will wear burqas.
Well, the same can be said, though, for the Jewish religion as well, because if we look back, women can be stoned to death.
Well,
all these things we say about the Islam religion, you know, look at the Jewish religion as well. The leaders were the tribe of Levi. They controlled all.
That's the same.
They
old
were tied to them.
That's the same old, same old testament that the Christians use. But they don't impose that.
That back in the days. They imposed that quite heavily back in the days, in fact.
Back in the day, yes. And Christians evolved from that same book, haven't they?
No, but I'm talking about the Christians. I'm talking about the Judaics who still practice that same book.
Where do they practice it, these aspects of it, stoning and all that? They don't stone in Israel. I'm not sure how they've evolved out of it, but they've become more accommodating to modern times than Islam. Islam still practices those archaic methods, and Islam's new. The Quran was, Muhammad wrote in 800 A.D.,
Muhammad wrote his book. Muhammad did not write the Quran, though. The Quran is the first five books of the Old Testament.
Well, what is Muhammad's book then?
Muhammad's, actually, we have edogs. What is Muhammad's book? What are the writings of Muhammad called? We'll wait for him to get up on here.
If his is like mine, it takes the characters very slowly. What Muhammad wrote is supposed to supersede the past as the New Testament is supposed to supersede the past. So we don't stone a man who lieth with a man as if he were a woman.
In the Old Testament it said that if a man beds with a man as he would a woman, stone him to death, for this is an abomination unto God.
And so we've moved away from that. In society, are we in violation of the Old Testament? But then the New Testament excused that and made some new, I don't want to get into religion, but some new tenets or a new contract with man. Muhammad, though, basically said, what I say goes. And he insists on a number of things, including Sharia law.
Actually, Gary, we have a call real quick. Arizona 217. Do you have a question for Gary or myself or anybody?
I got a couple statements for you.
Sure.
Gary.
Yes.
I don't know how old you are. I'm an old fart. I remember as a kid growing up, back in the day when television went off the air at 11:30 and they had their normal deal with the Star-Spangled Banner and then the... I flipped the 30 bounds of Earth and all that.
And then you had the pattern all night long.
Yeah, well, I remember at that time going on, I'm sure some of his older guys remember it, they would have the commercials come out with the reminders to make sure that if you had your alien registration card filled out, renewal filled out and sent in by the first, and then they went and told you that, aliens, you're required to carry your alien identification card. Okay. Nothing's changed. That law is still the same. What might surprise people, I was stationed in Würzburg, Germany. My son born off Army Hospital and at American Army Hospital. When he went to enlist in the Army when he turned 18, he was required to get a form that would allow him to become a permanent American citizen. So if they're doing this to us...
So many years after his first tour of duty?
No, this is before he could even join the Army.
Oh, the agreement, yes. He didn't get citizenship until after...
No. It's a different form. All he had to do was sign saying that he has chosen... the United States as his citizenship, and he had to take the oath of allegiance, and that's all he had to do, and he was an American citizen. But here he is, he's a son of, two American citizens born on a military reservation, U.S. military reservation overseas, and actually he would not be eligible to run for president of the United States if he wanted to.
We're not talking about the birth issue. We could do a show on that.
What I'm saying.
I hate to, we're down to our last 60 seconds. So sorry I didn't see you on. I wish I would have seen you on there. We could have brought you in sooner, but we're down to our last 60 seconds. So I want to thank Gary for coming on at www.outpost-freedom.com. And committee. Gary, I appreciate you coming on. I've got a question.
Now, let me ask you a question. Do we want to try and continue this again or not?
Actually, yeah, but I wanted to bring you on for a different show for soon. I was going to actually ask if you wanted to come on to a show that we're doing on the 14th about the 14th. I'm sorry, on this Wednesday about the 14th Amendment. I actually had some people request you in the chat room to be on that show, so I wanted to see if you wanted to come on for that one.
Okay, but I'm going to have to go do some research and find those cases. find the 14th. But, yes, I'll do that. Just send me the information. It was 6:30 on the... Wednesday?
6:30 Wednesday.
Okay.
6:30 your time Wednesday.
Okay. I'll be there.
All right, everybody. Well, listen, thank you so much for listening in. We're going to continue this one again with the part 3 on SB 1070. Also, this Sunday, we're going to be broadcasting the marathon for Republic Broadcasting. A lot of great people on there. I'll be on there as well at 7 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. And then Monday, Tuesday, we'll have some great shows as well. And Wednesday, E-Dogs will be on with us. And Terminator Girl will be on Tuesday as well. So I'll be sending everybody an update and for the show. So thank you for coming on. Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoyed. Bye-bye.